WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
George Clifton ran a data processing office of a large utility company in Chicago, where he got hired fresh out of the Navy as a customer representative. He knew he had a job for life. He took the homicidal public on the chin for 11 years, ate his pile of aspirin, and the company rewarded him by kicking him upstairs. That's the opening of Jan Novak's new comic novel, The Grand Life. Novak understands life in the bureaucracy because he lives it. He makes his living as a computer operations supervisor for the telephone company in Chicago. But his main character, George, the most status quo bureaucrat of all, eventually breaks out of his routines and begins to indulge in excess. Novelist Jan Novak emigrated from Czechoslovakia with his family when he was a teenager. He's lived in Chicago for the past 17 years. He told me why he wanted to write about office workers.
What I wanted to do with the book was to sort of get down the corporate office life that I live. Of course, it's not a hugely tragic situation, so the only attitude to assume to this material that I've found apt was sort of a satirical attitude. I was, more than anything, what inspired me was the language used in these situations. It's sort of a computer bureaucratic lingo vernacular that's pretty strikingly inadequate to some modes of discourse, you know, talking about feelings or thoughts. But it has to do, and as a result, people use it to talk about these things, and often it results in sort of a skewed poetry.
I think in a way, for someone who's new to a country, that it's the idioms and the slang expressions that make the least sense, because if you translate them literally, they don't mean what they're supposed to. Like, he had a beef with his boss. Well, if you know beef as a slab of meat, this expression isn't going to make any sense to you.
That's true, and it didn't at first, you know. But I've been here half my life now, and although I have an accent, I've been absorbing English for 17 years now.
When you started your office job, did you know corporate speak and bureaucratic language?
Not at all. I stumbled into it. I was hired. After knocking about, I had like six jobs within half a year, and I was looking for a job which would allow me to write. I knew I wanted to write then. And this friend told me about a job in the phone company where a full-time job consisted of going to work three times for 12-hour shifts, and then having 3 days off, and at the end of four cycles like this, having 9 days off. So you wind up going to work 12 times a month, and it's a full-time job, ideal for writing. So I went after the job, and I stumbled into this corporate situation, and I've held on to the job since then. I've been able to write that way.
Do your colleagues know that you have a double life, that you're also a writer?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I have used... The book is a huge hit around the office because I've used real names of people.
Oh, no,
that I work
really?
With. Yeah.
That's very unconventional.
I thought, you know, I like real names, real-sounding names. I hate contrived names. So I thought, well, why not use the people around me? Nobody really matches the character, and they all had to. And the publisher was very nervous about it, so they had to sign releases that they won't sue.
Does your interest in the bureaucratic mind go back to Czechoslovakia and to a political bureaucracy?
In a way, probably that's where it's coming from. Although the bureaucracy in Czechoslovakia is much more maddening than it is here, but it's something that is very present in a Czech life, I would say. And so I've been listening to my parents or people talk about that world in sort of Gogolian satirical terms all my life. And I think that's one of the things that found its way into the book, too.
Did you have to fight through the bureaucracy in order to emigrate?
Well, ours was a very special case, actually. My father had been embezzling some money, and we're escaping before it was discovered. So I think he just bought the passports. We went for a four-day trip to Vienna. It was in the summer. I left in my shorts, and I didn't have a pair of pants for like a month because we wound up in a refugee camp.
You know, when you were describing how your father had embezzled money and that's why you had to get out of the country, you were laughing. You seemed to find that kind of funny. It didn't sound like you were, embarrassed or ashamed by it.
Well, you know, it happened. I don't see any reason to hide it or anything. It became a sort of an inspiration for my first book. It's a story of a man who embezzles a lot of money and becomes an immigrant and gambles all the money away and comes to this country and succumbs to gambling. And it was, in a way, amusing. Nobody got hurt. You know, all the money is underwritten by the state, and it was only the state that sort of lost out on the embezzlement. And my father thought that since the state took away all the opportunities to sort of reach any kind of a human potential for him, he might as well fight back.
How did your family end up in Chicago? Did you have your eyes set on getting to Chicago when you left Czechoslovakia?
Oh, no, we had our eyes set, I guess. Well, nobody knew about all this, so my father had his eyes set on leaving the country, and nobody else knew we were leaving.
That's true, right.
And then in the refugee camps, we had to decide where to go next. And you could go to, you know, south. We wound up staying in the refugee camps for almost a year, and they were pretty rough. It's nothing like both people have to face, but it was not very pleasant. So there was a powerful incentive in trying to get out of there. And you could go to South Africa. If you signed up for South Africa, they got you out in a day. If you went to Australia, they got you out in a couple months. Or you could try to go to America, which was probably the easiest country to start out in economically, although there was no assistance.
Do you think, in a way, it was a lucky break that you ended up in Chicago because there are so many interesting speech styles in major American cities? You have all this street language and different dialects, different slang expressions.
Very much so, very much. The Chicago English is definitely a tool of communication that has been impacted greatly by the immigration process. It's been sort of boiled down to, you can communicate anything in Chicago, I think, with using maybe 5,000 words. And there's a certain wonderful punchy quality to it.
That's interesting. So it's a style of speaking that was shaped by the immigrant experience.
To a large degree, right.
When did you feel like you were comfortable writing in English? How long did it take till you got to that point?
It's a very gradual process. I mean, I wrote a screenplay in English while I was still writing in Czech. And I decided to write a novel. And at first, I was still writing in Czech, and I was looking at this thing. And I anticipated, 300 pages or something, 400 pages. And I thought of the pain of translation that would be involved in working on it. And I just decided to write it in English. At that point, it was a sort of a conscious decision that it was just too much of a bother to try to translate it. As a matter of fact, the book has later, this last year, been translated back into Czech to be also published by the same publishing house in Toronto. And, like I said, at one time I was poised to write the book in Czech, and now I'm reading it in Czech, and it's my book. It's the same sort of driving rhythm, same long sentences, my words, all the episodes are the same. And the language is totally different from anything that I would write. And it's very legitimate. So it's a very distorted view of myself that I get through these pages when I go. It's a eerie, fascinating process.
What makes this especially interesting is that you have all these English colloquialisms that now have to find Czech equivalents in order to get translated into Czechoslovakian.
Well, with Grand Life, it will be a real problem because a lot of the words from the computer vernacular do not have equivalents in Czechoslovakia because basically the technology is not there yet.
So how long are you going to stay in your office job?
I don't know. As long as I have these hours, I think, no matter what else happens in my life.
It gives you security so that you can go home and write.
Right, and it's my umbilical cord to the real world, too. I want to know how people don't sleep nights trying to compose their answer to a boss over something. It just gives me a lot of material to write about. It gives me a lot of, it's very linguistically interesting. Just the role of an observer turns me on, and it's provided by this job. So it's not just the economic security.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
I thank you.
Jan Novak's new novel, The Grand Life, is published by Simon & Schuster. He spoke to us from the NPR Bureau in Chicago.